Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And we had a baseball score in game one of the Western Conference Final, 8-6 for the Colorado Avalanche over the Edmonton Oilers. That was a wild one.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they got the late goal to make it 8-6 so we don't have to hear a bunch of football jokes about like how the Oilers missed the extra point or whatever. Those were always fun.
Colorado went for the 2 point.
Oh, wow. That's okay. Like a
and they got it.
CFL joke. Insert here.
A rouge.
Yeah. But that game was freaking amazing. It was.
Well.
No, don't. Okay. Don't you even.
No. I'm not. Okay. I'm not saying. Amazing is maybe not the word I would use.
It wasn't amazingly well played.
Right, that's what I was going to say. I thought both teams played like shit would be kind of my big thing with it.
But we're not NHL coaches.
But it resulted in an exciting game.
Exactly.
That's more my thing.
Amazingly exciting and fun and everything that you would want if you sat down to invest 3 hours of your life in watching a hockey game. That's what you want. Now, if you're a coach or even one of the players, you're probably like, yeah, that sucked. We need to change a bunch of stuff. But I hope they don't. I hope they continue to just constantly score on each other for the entire series, because that's what we want. We've got this much talent in a series. This is exactly what we want. And it was, it was fun as hell.
It was so funny last night. Obviously, you don't get the Turner broadcast up there, but Wayne Gretzky is on there, and he's going like, look, nobody did more offense than me in the history of the NHL. Like, this is, I'm paraphrasing, but this is what he said. Somebody's going to play defense out there, though. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, Wayne, don't say that kind of thing. Don't you want more goals? Like, isn't everybody always going, hey, wouldn't it be great if everybody, well, we don't want it to be like the 80s, but we do want every game to be 7-5 or what. And it's like, okay, you can't have it both ways, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was not a lot of defense and not much goaltending too, which is.
That is the key factor to me. I think, yeah, obviously, you know, there's a lot of odd man rushes and that sort of thing, but. The fact that, like, you know what goal is really, like, emblematic of that is the Nathan MacKinnon goal on Mike Smith to make it 2-2, maybe, where he just kind of, like, pokes the puck. Like, the puck's way in front of him, and he just kind of pokes it between Mike Smith's legs from 6 feet away or whatever. That goal was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, that is a college hockey level goal in terms of. Oh boy, that shouldn't have gone in.
Look, it's even us, pro offense, pro scoring. Like, nobody's saying that we should have an average of 14 goals a game, but occasionally, yeah. And when you have like, you know, four or five of the best 10 or 15 players in the world in the same game, yeah, let's go ahead and. Rack it up a little bit, especially for an opening game, and I'm sure they'll work a little bit to figure out how they get this down to a more manageable level. But it was great. I was entertained start to finish. I guess we have to talk about the offside thing. Would be the one.
It's so funny again. Like we're always talking about we want more. We want more goals in the NHL. And then there's all these like Gen X or older hockey writers who were like, what about the spirit of the thing, though?
Yep.
Isn't the spirit of the offside? Shut up, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to do this.
I've got no issue with the NHL being like nitpicky and pedantic to keep a goal. That's correct. What they should be doing on all of these things. Well, what they should be doing is not reviewing offsides, but if they're going to, they should be looking for every reason to count goals, not the way it usually goes, which is it feels like they're desperately trying to take goals off the board.
You got to get those off the board. You got to get them off.
So I'm fine with the ruling. I was very surprised.
Oh, shocked.
I don't know what you guys got, but like on Sportsnet up here, they were like, oh, this isn't going to count. And then they were like, why is this taking so long? Like, you only need to see this once for it to not count. And then when it did count, there was confusion, and then there was a lot of explanation, and Elliot Friedman did a lot of work on not just explaining. He pretty clearly had a direct line into the decision makers and not just explaining it, but pulling up examples and that. And I'm at the point now where I get it. I think it probably was the right call based on how this – I won't say how the rule is written because the rule is very ambiguous, but – I've seen enough examples of similar calls that I can say that they probably got it right. But ultimately, as somebody who's neutral in this, I don't really even care that they get it right by the strict letter of the law. Count the goal. It was a great goal and
fun goal. Yeah,
we should be counting more of them. But I do think that they ultimately did get it right, even though the rule itself seems kind of ambiguous and weird and certainly counterintuitive. I mean, if you I think 90% of hockey fans, if this was your first time encountering this sort of play, you're like, oh, that's not going to count, and then you had to figure out why it would. But yeah, count more goals, not less. I'm good with that.
Yeah, my thing, I guess, is, you know, I think it was an Avs game in the playoffs several years ago now, but it was like Landeskog was coming off for a change. Yep.
He was
and had like a sliver of his skate on the ice, and so the whole play didn't count.
Yeah,
and
that was a game seven.
And that was like one of those things where it's like, just kind, like, he's not involved in the play. Just count the fucking, like, you know, that's the rule in soccer. You can be offside if you're not involved in the play.
Yeah.
The second they kick the ball to you, that's when it becomes a problem. And I think that should just be the rule in the NHL.
And
like, again, if we're trying to increase scoring, if a guy's not involved in the play, he can be behind the fucking red line for all I care. As long as he doesn't touch the puck, then who cares?
Yeah. I mean, the argument is, well, you know, then the defense has to adjust to him, whatever. But, yeah, you know, no, so I, whatever. It's same thing with the kicked in goal from the Calgary series. Like, it was already going in. That has nothing to do with the rule, but use a little common sense to keep goals on the board. So, I don't think the Oilers got screwed by the strict letter of the law. I was happy to see, for once, you know, the NHL kind of twisting themselves a bit to get to a good goal instead of the... Now, it would have been nice if any of this had been explained at the time, instead of the ref just going like, yeah, it's goal. But we've been over that a million times, and they're apparently never going to change that. So, I think in the end it was the right result, probably the right call, and a tough break for the Oilers, because I understand completely why they challenged it. It ended up, you know, not only did they not get the goal overturned, but they give up the power play goal on the ensuing minor. But that's the way it's supposed to go, man. Like, you're not supposed to challenge unless you're really, really sure. I don't know. I probably would have been really sure if I was Jay Woodcroft, so...
Right, that, I was gonna say the same thing. Yeah, because like, even Turner has like the ref to come on and explain, well, this is what they're gonna call, and he's like, oh, this should be a goal. They're gonna call this back, and then the second they do, he's like, okay, here's why they didn't call it back, which is like helpful, but also it's like you could have said that 3 minutes ago while they were doing the
ruling. I've heard it's been a rough ride for the because both don't ESPN and TNT both have. It's Koharski and is it Koharski Dave Jackson?
And Dave Jackson is the Turner.
And I've heard it's been a a rough ride, certainly compared to the NFL, where, I mean, they have some guy comes in, he's like, oh yeah, this is what is going to happen. This is what they're looking at. This is what, and it's...
Yeah, and you know what? The good news is that's not a problem for hockey, that every ref, no matter how experienced they are, has a completely different interpretation of what the rule is.
It's fine. Yeah.
It's fine.
The one I've seen a lot over the last couple, or maybe, no, I've seen a few times in over the last couple weeks where people have said, you know, maybe the NHL should have a thing where if you challenge a play, they can say it's inconclusive and the play stands, but then you don't get the penalty. And it's like, no. Yeah,
that's a good idea.
It's not. Yeah. Don't do that. Because then they'll call everything inconclusive.
Everything inconclusive, right. Yep, great point. Nope.
So, no, it
should
be... A classic
situation
of
you say something about the NHL, and then you go, oh, makes sense. And then you go, but it's the NHL. Yeah. Right, I forgot it's the NHL. So it's going to be the worst possible outcome.
They would just rule everything inconclusive. They would never give out the penalty. And then, you know, it's you should get a penalty if you're wrong, because the system is only supposed to be if you're absolutely sure.
We're trying to juice offense.
Yeah.
Give out penalties for everything.
Yeah. You're
calling
being,
timeout. That's a penalty.
If you put your hand up and say, I don't think that goal should count, especially on some nitpicky thing, you're being a pain in the ass. And there should be a penalty for being a pain in the ass. So I'm...
Hey, don't rock the boat.
I'm fine with that. By the way, I will say this. Even though I think it was the right call... There's no way the linesman in real time was thinking about it that way.
No, they just missed it.
And then on replay, they looked at it and they're like, oh, I was wrong. But wait, I could actually be
they're
right.
Honestly,
and I'm fine with
I
that.
Feel like yet last night there were about five or six plays, most of which obviously didn't end up in a goal, that I was like, this play is 100% offside. Yeah. I don't know what that linesman is looking
at. And I think those were the only five or six plays that didn't end up in goals, because
again, for sure. Let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on the series as a whole? Like, just broadly speaking, pretend last night didn't happen. We're going in to game two fresh. What are your thoughts on this series?
I mean, the Avs are the better team, but the Oilers absolutely have a chance. Like, this is one of those modern day NHL things where you're like, yes, this team is clearly better. They have a 60-40 chance of winning the series. Right. And then that, you know, the fact that they've already got game one in the bank moves that up. Except we don't know, at least as we're recording this, what the Darcy Kuemper situation is.
Correct.
So if he is out for any length of time, that maybe slides it back where it's kind of like the... Sort of like the Pittsburgh New York series, where after the first triple overtime game, where you're like, yeah, they won, but they lost their goalie. That maybe kind of cancels out, and in that case, it did.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. I saw someone say that he took himself out of the game because he was having trouble seeing the puck and had blurry vision.
Oh wow. Okay.
And I can't remember where I saw this.
That's interesting, because the one thing I noticed, and this is probably me seeing things that aren't there, but I found it interesting that I believe when they announced that he wasn't coming back, they called it upper body, but they didn't say upper body injury, which suggests that, you know, it's normally, I banged up my shoulder or my whatever. That had me thinking of other things, and I mean, that would certainly be there. I was worried a little bit, just the way that he went over and talked to the coach, that maybe it was like a chest or a heart thing. Like, if he's like, yeah, I'm having like palpitations or whatever, get him out of there. But it was just a strange situation. He was late coming out for the period, which may or may not.
Yeah, that was an equipment issue.
They said it was equipment, and they showed it working on the equipment, but that could also be like he was late getting back, like, to his gear and like getting, you know, ready to go. So I don't know what that was.
Okay. I can't find, I just saw a guy say Kuemper pulled himself reportedly because of blurry vision. I can't find what that report is. So that might be all bullshit, but you know, he took that stick in the eye in the first round, mm-hmm. and I would say wasn't particularly great for a lot of games since then. And then, you know, he takes a puck or two off the face mask in the early goings of last night. And so, it like, would it surprise me if it's a vision problem? I guess it wouldn't.
Yeah, and that's obviously, you know, anything like that. I mean, anything's not good, but I mean, if he's, and he was asked, Jared Bednar was asked after the game, how long will he be out? And he basically just said, we'll see, which doesn't tell us anything except it's not him saying, no, he's fine. He'll be back for game two. You hope it's an injury if it's anything, because, you know, injuries heal up and we know how to deal with them.
Oh, so. I got it. I found it. It's Adrian Dater said, I was told by a source the injury might be an aggravation to the right eye, at least in some way. We won't know for sure. I'd be surprised if he plays in game two.
Okay.
And that's whatever
you think of Dater, he's reasonably plugged in Colorado. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's very, boy, that would be very tough for Colorado. So
another 8-6 game on tap for... Yeah. Game two.
And then what do you, if you're the Oilers, are you, you're going back to Mike Smith here? Or?
You have to.
Yeah,
I think whatever you may think of Mike Smith, right? And I would say he has probably actively cost the Oilers, I don't know, 3 or 4 games in this postseason. And certainly only stolen maybe 2 or 3. So I would say a net negative maybe, but like he's been mostly competent.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have said net negative until last night when he absolutely was the reason they lost.
Well, I mean, he certainly didn't help them out.
He gave up 6 goals on 25 shots. End of discussion.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You need your goal. Even 5 on 25, you're like, oh, that's like an 800 save percentage. You know, you can maybe work with that if you're the Oilers. 6 on 25, that's a tough one. That's, because they were doing the same thing. Look, you know, he gave up 6 goals on 25 shots, but, you know, it wasn't his fault. And it's like, yeah, there were definitely some goals that were not his fault. And the same was true at the other end. Like, multiple Oilers goals looked like, the kind of goals you see in an all-star game where it's like, oh, there's nobody within 15 feet of that all world level player, right?
Yep.
But I thought he was, especially on the first two, the goals in the first period, I thought he was just horrendous.
Yeah.
Just waving at pucks, not he's like a third defenseman back there in that he shouldn't have been playing goal. But but like Mikko Koskinen, look, there's a reason they're not going to him. And the reason is they trust him even less than they trust Mike Smith. Because with Mike Smith, you never know what you're going to get. With Mikko Koskinen, you know what you're going to get. Bad goaltending.
Yeah. And he was fine last night, but, in fact, kept them in it. I think the thing, if you've got any question, the tipping point is that we did this last series, right? I mean,
right.
Mike Smith got shelled, came out. Now in that game, Koskinen also got shelled.
Yes.
But then Smith comes back and he wins for it. Like that is one nice thing about having a 40-year-old goalie. They tend to have shorter memories. Like, you know, he's not going to be rocking himself to sleep at night. You know, he's been down this road before. He's had lots and lots of bad games and he'll be back to whatever he is in game two, but he's not going to drag this in with him. So I think now if they get shelled again, then maybe you're thinking about it. Cause you're like, I didn't,
it was
one of those things. Like other than the one McKinnon one, like I didn't feel like any of the goals were bad goals, but it's sort of like
I thought the Makar goal, like, yeah, he wired that, but mm-hmm. also you had like 60 feet or whatever.
It was one of those things where it's like, you know, the Tortorella thing where he's like, we just need a save. And you just weren't getting any saves on anything other than the basics. So
I would say for like his truly bad games in this postseason, like I guess the issue is that like, yeah, that the game after the Calgary game, he bounced back and, you know, what did he give up, like 3-on-45 or something like that. Like he got shelled and wasn't terrible in the bounce back game there. But I gotta say, I thought, you know, they won obviously the last couple of games of the Calgary series. I didn't think he was that good. I think, excuse me, this is maybe three bad games in a row, a little bit from Mike Smith. So I don't know. They won two of them. So yep. What are you gonna say? But
and this is what they knew they were in for, right? This isn't Jacob Markstrom suddenly crapping the bed for four games, and you go, oh, we didn't have that built into the plan. Like,
right.
You're not expecting Mike Smith to be great or even good. You just need him to be good enough that Connor McDavid and friends can win games for you, and it almost worked last night. So this is a series. Yeah. This is
yeah, and I thought McDavid, you know, as advertised again, like just the matchups where, you know, he, because everybody said, oh, it'll be MacKinnon line versus McDavid line head to head every time, you know. And I thought when they were on the ice together, I think probably MacKinnon outscored them, but the Avs looked way more, or the Oilers looked way more dangerous when he was on the ice against McDavid.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Oh man,
they actually got outscored 2-1 when it was McDavid and MacKinnon head to head. So there
the
you
Oilers
go.
Did.
Yeah.
Oh well, okay. Well, there we go. MacKinnon's now the best player in the world. We've got
no. I'm sorry. No, I misheard you. McDavid outscored.
Aha.
McKinnon,
okay,
2-1.
McDavid's back to the best player in the world.
There yeah, we go. He's done.
All
it.
Right.
Well, and that's the other thing. I saw people saying this whole time, obviously, oh, MacKinnon versus McDavid. It's like, well, it doesn't feel like it should be Makar versus McDavid at this point. Like, isn't that the guy that's the best player on the Colorado Avalanche? Is yeah. Well, okay. But yeah, so let's talk, I guess, quickly about these two teams eliminated. The St. Louis Blues and the Calgary Flames. Let's start with the Blues. The big question I guess you would have to ask is, do you think if Jordan Binnington is in there, St. Louis wins that series? Because I don't.
No.
I think the Avs were kind of irresistible in that
series. Yeah, I think, again, the Avalanche are, they were the best team in that series. They're the best team in the league. So I don't think that was the decisive moment. I do think that, you know, you lose your starting goalie, that matters. So it certainly didn't help, but I don't think that one play or that one injury was the difference between the Blues winning or losing the series.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't even think Husso was bad. He did not have a good game six, but on the balance, I think I would say Husso was, like, fine. And, you know, this is what the Avs can do to a perfectly fine goalie.
Yeah. Now, on that subject, is this the point where we can make fun of Jordan Binnington and his...
You know, I really wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt on this.
All right.
Where, like, because everybody saw the quote yesterday where it's like, it was a God-given opportunity for me to huck an empty water bottle at the sky, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, maybe the quote is removing the context, blah, blah, blah. Then I went and watched the video of him, and he is, like, deadpanning. No, this was a God-given opportunity, and, you know, sometimes things – you know, really went into hockey player mode, like he was talking about going hard to the net and having his stick on the ice, and fortunately my teammate found me, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like and so, of course, I did have to throw the water bottle at him.
I loved how his explanation was like, look, in that situation, I can either walk away and do nothing, or I can throw a water bottle at the guy. It was like, yeah, That's true for most dumb things you can do. That, yeah, I had the choice to do the dumb thing or not do the dumb thing. So, I mean, what do you want me to do? I had to do the dumb thing. I think
it reminds me of the Tom Cruise quote from a couple weeks ago of, they asked him, why do you do all these death defying stunts in all your movies? Like, you do the real stunts. You're like a 60-year-old man. Why? Mm-hmm. And he goes, they never asked Gene Kelly why he danced.
That's right. Yep.
And it's like, that's right. They never asked why Jordan Binnington was acting like a big babe.
Yeah. They never asked why Jordan Binnington was acting like a total fake tough guy.
Yeah.
But,
I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt because...
I mean, we know you're a big Binnington guy.
I love him. But that quote totally read to me as, with context, I bet he said it with like a wry smile or something like that. No. Mm-hmm. But I do want to give him a little bit of credit here. He did say he was carrying it only at that point because he was looking for a recycling bin and couldn't find it.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah.
So
and
Earth First, we like that.
And he did make the point that I think we can all agree on, that now Nazem Kadri has to marry his mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I think you should leave if you're not following. Get on there.
The other thing about that that I guess we do have to give him credit for is he's like, man, look, he was going hard to the net. Like, I was mad at the moment, but like, that's just him doing his job.
Well,
correct.
Kind of, right? Like, his thing was sort of like, hey, he was going hard to the net, but also like, I don't know. Maybe this is me reading into it. He seemed to still be implying that
the big Binnington defender on this podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. What a world.
He sounded like he was sort of like implying that there was still something wrong with it, where he was like, yeah, you know, it's a hockey player, but he knows that things can happen and he knows what could have happened.
I get what you're saying.
Like, sort of like he knew he could injure me. So even though it was clean, he still, I still had to throw a water. I don't know. But anyways, we won't go any further because I can tell you're just going to get upset and, just defend Jordan Binnington to the death. So that's fine.
Why is everybody coming for my best friend, Jordan Binnington?
We all have our, we stand.
Yeah. The other thing about the Blues is they had their like getaway day yesterday, which is where the Binnington quote came from. And, basically they were like, oh yeah, we're not worried about what happens with Tarasenko next season.
Yeah.
Really? He's a pending unrestricted free agent. He requested a trade. Maybe they're not worried because they're like, because we're trading him.
Yeah.
Two weeks from now. But I was surprised by that. I thought, they'd have a more, let's say, we'll wait and see kind of answer.
I mean, I guess to say that you're not worried is sort of the cliche. Maybe they're not worried because they worried last year and then they didn't do anything last year.
Yeah.
And everything worked out great. So maybe that's it. I mean, I think you probably, I don't see them extending him.
No.
So you either trade him or maybe you just go, that's
one more kick at the can with this group.
I wrote about this today. Look, like in every other sport, it's completely normal to go like, yeah, we're going to have this guy till the end of his contract and he'll be productive and then we won't have him anymore and we'll get somebody else. Like it's only in hockey where it's like, oh God, what if they lose him for nothing?
Prepare to hear the term own rental 6 billion times in relation to Vladimir Tarasenko. Yeah. The stupidest phrase in hockey. Own rental.
It's an own rental. Rent to own.
Like I guess my thing with the Blues for next season is they have a lot of really good young players that I like a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And those players should continue to improve because they're young. Your Jordan Kyrou's, your Robert Thomas's, that kind of thing. However, I will say that the whole thing about, the St. Louis Blues had 58 guys who scored 20 goals this season. I wouldn't expect that to continue into next
year. That number was high.
That really... Every once in a while, it feels like a team does that where, like, for example, I think it was the 2011 Bruins where, like, half the team had 20 goals. And you're just like, oh, I guess, is that real? Is that a thing? And it turns out it's usually not particularly real. Mm-hmm. I think it was, like, Milan Lucic had 30 goals that year or whatever. And it's like, Yeah, counting on Milan Lucic to be a 30-goal guy is maybe not what you want to do going forward, you know. And I would say that's true of a lot of the guys who scored a bunch of goals on the Blues. Not that they're not going to score like 15 or whatever, but just being like, well, surely they'll keep scoring 20 forever.
Yeah.
That's where you start getting into a little bit of dicey territory.
And one of those guys was Braden Schenn, who did not score at all in the playoffs and was he is like this year's guy who didn't produce in the playoffs. And you're like, aha, that's bad. And then he's like, yeah, my body was not working. I had broken ribs and all this other stuff. And you're like, oh, you should have been in the hospital. Okay. I guess we can't be too mad at you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always a thing where I just sit there and kind of wonder, like, is the next guy up really that much worse than this guy who can barely move? Like, they have to wheel him into the arena like Hannibal Lecter just because they can't.
Yeah.
He can't walk.
Yeah.
But the other thing to say, I was going to say a second ago, is Ville Husso's a pending unrestricted free agent, and I'm fascinated to see what they do with him. Because he was their starter for a good chunk of the season, obviously lost that job in the playoffs, I would say somewhat fairly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I said it last week, there's a reason he's like a 26 or 27-year-old or whatever who was making 750 grand, right?
Yep. But was quite good this year, and you're right. Like this is a situation where I'm sure his agent is going like, dude, this is where you have to go get your contract, and it's not going to be a monster deal somewhere, but this is where you go get something well into the seven figures, and the Blues already have $6 million committed long term to your apparent favorite player, so they can't
best in
unlikely
the league.
To bring him back at like. You know, $2 or $3 million or something like that. And I don't know. The goaltending free agent market is weird this year. It's there's Darcy weird, Kemper, yeah. Potentially. There's Marc-Andre Fleury, but I mean, who knows? He's probably very limited in where he would go. And then it could be Husso next, right? Like he might be the guy. Jack Campbell, I guess, it would be another one, but he could be the next guy up. So yeah. Unless he really loves it in St. Louis, he should absolutely hit the market and see what happens.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a really interesting question because, like, I'm just even from the Blues perspective. What do you do? I don't know. But yeah, let's move on to the Calgary Flames. They're in a weird position as well because they have two-thirds of their top line, two of the best players at their positions in the world. Johnny Gaudreau is a pending unrestricted free agent and kind of seems like he's maybe going to test the market, as they say. And then a restricted free agent in Matthew Tkachuk, who is a year away from unrestricted free agency and I believe has like a $9 million qualifying offer.
Right, which they would desperately not want to use because that walks him right to UFA status. So,
but like that means that $9 million is like the starting point for any conversation about what he gets paid.
You would certainly imagine so. I mean, it we saw with like Jesperi Kotkaniemi, it doesn't have to be, but this guy is actually good and productive, so... Yeah, I think like he's got all the leverage in the world to really work them on a long-term deal.
And I like if I'm Calgary, I give him 8 years at like $10 million without reservation.
This is one of those awesome. At his age, like this is not, you know, we're
he's
always
what, 24?
He's
23?
He's got to be at least 24 if he's a year away from free agency, I think.
He is. He will 24. Be 25 in December.
So, but I mean, this is, you know, we're always like, oh, you know, these long-term contracts that are good at the beginning and then at the end you pay. And like, no, I mean, this is one of those very rare opportunities to give an 8-year deal to a guy and actually get value the whole 8 years. So it's going to be a question of what does he want? Does he, you know, does $10 million even do it? Does he want Mitch Marner money? Does he want... even more than that, coming off 100-point season, 40-goal season. He could absolutely get a ton. And in isolation, you give it to him. But then you've also got Johnny Gaudreau also coming off a career year. And it obviously, as an unrestricted free agent, he's got all the leverage, because the only leverage the Flames have is they can give him the eighth year if he signs whatever the July 1st equivalent is this year.
I think it's the 13th, maybe.
That sounds right.
If I'm remembering right.
And Johnny Gaudreau turns 29 this summer. So
yeah,
this is one where if you go 8 years or even 7 years, you probably are expecting diminishing returns at some point. But that doesn't mean you don't do it. But it does mean, I mean, maybe he's right in that sweet spot where that eighth year might tip him towards staying, and it sounds like he wants to stay. But again, you're probably looking at, I mean, is this another $10 million a year deal? And can you afford
that? Yeah, I think the
that?
Baseline for what you pay them combined is about $19-20 million bucks.
I don't know that you're going to, I don't
money
know you can get both of them for 19.
That's what I'm saying.
Unless you go like a shorter deal on Tkachuk, which is also a positive, like you go 2 or 3 years knowing that he's going to hit unrestricted free agency at 27 and really cash in. That's an option, but I don't know if it's the best one.
That's dicey though, man. I don't know.
Well, it's dicey for the team, but if I'm Matthew Tkachuk, I might prefer that, right? I might say like, I don't want to
give me a 1 year contract every year for until I'm no longer in my 20s.
I mean, if you're Tkachuk, you'd absolutely want a 1 year deal, but I mean, he could, in theory, he can go to the team and say, I will not sign for longer than 3 years. And we're not used to that in hockey. In hockey, it's always the longer deal is what the player wants. But in the NBA, for example, there's no star players who are like, yeah, lock me up for the better part of a decade with no possibility of a raise at any point. I don't know how you get both these, because the thing with Johnny Gaudreau, he can sit down and say like, I'll get $10 million as an unrestricted free agent, so why should I start anywhere south of that?
Right. Yeah. Because they also have to pay Mangiapane and Shillington as well. That both those guys are up, and they won't be cheap. Mangiapane had a great season. Shillington had a very good season.
I'm really interested to see what Gaudreau gets, because he could legitimately point to like Tavares and Panarin and say like, I'm in the same class as those guys, and they both got numbers that started with 11. And at the same time, his last 2 years were not great. But then this year absolutely was. So like if he's sitting there going, I can get 7 times 11, I can get $77 million at free agent, the Flyers or some team like that will absolutely give me that. So even if you're talking about an 8 year deal, you're already close to $10 million just on that. And
right. Since 2019, Johnny Gaudreau is ninth in the league in, or to, I'm sorry, 2016, okay. Is ninth in the league in scoring.
Yeah.
That's a lot of points.
He is a lot of points, especially considering he didn't have a ton of them the last couple of years. So.
Yeah. And well, to that point, even despite that, 15th in points per 60 in all situations.
Yep.
This guy's really good. He's going to get a whole shitload of money. Everybody in front of him, Kucherov, McDavid, Stamkos, Kaprizov, Marchand, Malkin, Pastrnak, Huberdeau, Dreisaitl, Panarin, Matthews, Crosby, MacKinnon, Robertson. Those are all like all world players.
You know,
like guys who, you know, if Marchand and Pastrnak were paid fairly, and Huberdeau too, I guess. You'd be like, well, all of those guys should be making like $10 million bucks, mm-hmm. right?
And this isn't a guy having a career year at like 32. He's definitely older than you would expect a guy to hit his prime, but it's not you know, it's not such an outlier that you shake it off. I think,
you know, two years ago he had a 99 point season.
Yeah.
So like the idea that, you know, he had a 100 point season this year, he finally got there. Well, he was pretty close that one time.
Top five in Hart Trophy. That I do wonder the teams that are looking at him, and there will be, if he gets there, a bunch. I do wonder
how Philadelphia Flyers.
The Flyers are the obvious one. Yep. You know, you look at the Devils, you wonder, like, would Seattle use some of their cap space? But I do wonder how much are we going to see the clip of that Connor McDavid overtime goal where Gaudreau is just out to lunch, just floating around the defensive zone, not close to anyone, not taking anyone, looking like he's getting ready to fly the zone like it's 3-on-3 in the regular season, and that's how the season ends. Which, you know, it's one play, but it was a big play. Probably cost him a couple of bucks.
10, 15, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Any other thoughts on the Flames? You know, we said last week, like, Markstrom was just awful.
Yeah. And I don't think that doesn't worry me in the sense that I do, it's simplistic, but I do look at this Flames team as, and I say, like, your goalie just got cold at the worst possible time.
That, and also, the best player in the world decided he was going to be the best player of all time for a week and a half.
I'll say this, and I might even write a thing on this later. I loved Daryl Sutter after that series, just being like they're better. Their players were better than ours. Their guys play better. He didn't get up there and go, they wanted it more. He didn't say like, oh, they had a higher gritty compete heart level. And this is a Sutter. For once, an NHL coach was just like, no, man, they played better. Like their guys were I think I've even got the quote here somewhere, but you know, he didn't do the same crap that everybody else is. Yeah, he says maybe our guys are doing all they can. Maybe Edmonton's just a little bit better right now.
That's a wild thing for a Sutter to say
for a coach for anyone in the NHL to say. We're so locked in, and other sports don't do this. We're so locked in that it's never talent, it's never execution. It's always just who tried hardest. And every coach, I've got this list. Now, I haven't done anything with it yet of just coaches with ridiculous, like, oh, they just wanted it more. We didn't try hard enough. And that's the beginning and the end of the analysis. And here's Daryl Sutter, like, no, our guys tried as hard as they could. And it wasn't enough because the Oilers are better than us, or the Oilers at least were better. And I love that. That was so refreshing to me.
Yeah, he's had a nice series of like non NHL style quotes the last little while. The quote about you know, playing the Avs in the first round is a waste of 8 days.
Yes, he's been great. He's been a great quote this year. After a decade where we all had to pretend he was a great quote when he was just kind of being a jerk, like with the Kings, like they'd be like, "How'd your team play?" And he'd be like, "Good." And people are like, "Oh, Daryl Sutter's so funny. He gave a one-word answer." Yeah. And it's like, no, he's just kind of being
he's
dink
doing the
up
Belichick
there.
Thing.
Yeah. But whereas now he's like, he seems legitimate. Like, did you see the one where he was talking about the playing his brothers in the playoffs and like whoever lost had to get on the tractor on Tuesday because that was the rule at the farm at home. And, you know, it was, he's good. I like him a lot now. And he really won me over with that quote about the Oilers just being better.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Why don't we take a break and we'll be right back to talk about the Eastern Conference Final. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by Athletic Greens. And folks, I say it, I think every week, I started taking Athletic Greens because they, you know, sent me some, and I would always been very skeptical. Oh, do I want to become like a green juice guy and that kind of stuff? And I was always like, seems like a lot of work, that kind of thing. With Athletic Greens, it's not a lot of work. Tastes really good, you know, and it's got all the 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens that I'm looking for. I'm out there going, where are my damn adaptogens today? Well, they're right here with Athletic Greens. So the thing with Athletic Greens, too, is that it's going to be cheaper than your coffee-flavored coffee. It's less than $3 a day, and that's you investing in your health and not your freaking cold brew habit, right? So here's what you're going to want to do. Athletic Greens is going to give you a 1 year free supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/puck. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/puck to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. All right, Eastern Conference Final starts tonight. The Nye Rangers, the TB Lightning. What do you think?
Well, everyone's talking about the goaltending matchup, and which, yes, rightly,
understandably so.
Two best goalies in the league. That's kind of, I've seen a lot of people say like, oh yeah, this is going to be the low scoring series. You know, there were more goals in the Oilers Avs game than there will be in the whole series. And
yeah,
I'm not quite convinced of that. Partly because for all the talk of, you know, all the talent in Edmonton, Colorado, like there's a ton in this series too.
Yep.
So I don't, you know, I'm not thinking we're going to get a bunch of 1-0 games, but I do think we're going to get, I hopefully this will be the series that, you know, whenever there's an 8-6 game and people go, ah, I want some goaltending, hopefully we get back and forth, lots of action, lots of scoring chances. And then if it's 3-2, that's fine because it'll still be an exciting game with great goaltending. And by great goaltending, I mean goaltenders actually making saves as opposed to just getting hit in the chest by shots that had no chance because there was nothing else for the player to do. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
I think you're going to be a little, but like both of these goalies are just so good. These are not your Mike Smith or Jonathan Quick or whatever, where it's like they're making a lot of saves and they're doing it by being athletic and just being a little bit out of position, but getting there anyway. Mm-hmm. These are two guys where it's like, oh no, it seems like every puck hits them right in the chest or whatever, right in the pad. So, you know, that's a tough one, but I guess the thing that I'm kind of looking at here is that these teams will kind of need their goaltending because, like, obviously you wouldn't look at what the Rangers have done all season and even in this playoff and go, I got to tell you, I really think the Rangers can lock down the Tampa Bay Lightning.
No.
Right? Like, they just, you know, they give up a lot of expected goals and scoring chances and all that kind of thing. And then Igor Shesterkin is there to be like, I got this stuff. You don't need to worry about all that.
And as every Ranger fan would say, goaltending is part of hockey. The goalie is on the roster. So, you know, it's
100%.
But yeah, you're right. This is not the 95 Devils with Martin Brodeur.
No.
They're going to need him to be the best goalie in this series,
yeah,
which would make him the best goalie in the world, and he might,
right? Yeah, but at the same time, the thing that I kind of think about is I would say the one area of Tampa's whole thing that I'm not like totally convinced they're good to go with is their PK, and the Rangers' power play obviously feasted down the stretch against Carolina, but like it was great all year, you know, well for most of the year anyway, and they have a lot of finishing talent, and you know, Chris Kreider's going to be around the net no matter who he's matched up against and that sort of thing. So like, while I think the Rangers will kind of continue to get caved in this series, I think they also have the talent to you know, make the Lightning pay for any minor mistake they might make. You know what I mean? So that's why I think goaltending, like I agree with you. I don't know that it's necessarily going to be like a bunch of games or 2-1. It wouldn't surprise me just because of the quality of the goaltenders involved. But I think both teams can make it where it's like, oh, these were a bunch of 4-3 games where everybody just kind of played pretty well, you know? That's my hope anyway.
That'd be great. I'd absolutely take that. And it has the potential to be, I mean, it has potential to be a great series. And you know, the Rangers, I guess, are the underdog Cinderella team of this year's playoffs, but they don't really feel that way? Like, none of us coming into this season were like, yeah, this is the team that's going to come out of the Metro. But,
right.
Yeah, they've got a ton of talent.
Yeah, we all thought it was going to be the Islanders.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Worked out great.
Yeah. So it's I'm looking forward to it a lot. And it's great. I mean, if you're a Rangers fan, and I don't, in the moment they wouldn't agree with this, but it feels like you're already playing with house money, because
for sure
you've gained a ton of experience, you had great moments, you've enjoyed the hell out of a run from a team that was no sure thing to even make the playoffs, and you figure it's nowhere to go but up from here. Now, obviously, we've seen lots of teams assume that, and then it doesn't work out. But but man, you got a hell of a fight against this Lightning team, because boy, they're good. I guess the other thing we have to say is, now this is where we bring up that weird stat about teams that have swept versus teams that have just played a 7-game series. And
I don't know this stat. Say to me what the stat is.
When there is a matchup between a team that swept the previous round and a team that went 7 the previous round, the team that went 7 has won game 1 like 7 of the like the last 7 times.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. Not even a little bit.
Yeah. And I believe they've won game 1. Maybe it's won the series. I'd have to check into that. But anyways, again, this is the rust versus rest sort of thing. But it's weird, because the Lightning have basically been having a training camp for the last week and a half.
Right.
But I don't think they're going to, I don't think they're going to come in rusty. But even if they do, I mean, they look like garbage against the Leafs in game 1. And I don't remember how that turned out, but they're still here, so probably okay. I'm too excited already about the potential of a Lightning Avalanche final. But even putting that aside, sure, every possible matchup is great. This is the time of year where usually there's like that one matchup. Like this time last year, we're all like, oh God, don't let it be Montreal and the Islanders.
Sure.
This year, it's like, what's the worst matchup? Rangers, Oilers? Okay. I'll take that. Sign me up. Yes, I will. I'll absolutely watch the hell out of that final. So I wrote a piece a couple days ago where I'm like, the playoffs have been great, and I don't really know what to do, because I'm usually the complaining guy, and they've just been pretty awesome so far, and they look like they might continue that way. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm also looking forward to the series. The one thing that I have hated in recent weeks, or days rather, is all these people were like, you know, the Rangers haven't played a good goal yet.
Yep.
They haven't played a good goal.
Don't do my voice.
That's like not untrue, right? But it's like, what were they supposed to do? Be like, you know what? We'll wait until Tristan Jarry is coming back.
No. Yeah, there's nothing they could do, but also you can point it out. Like,
yeah, for
you know,
sure.
Rangers fans getting mad, like I, you know, sending like, look at Antti Raanta's stats. He had a 9-10 saver. Yeah, as the backup goalie. Like, he is the backup goalie.
He played a bunch of Winnipeg Jets games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, we face third strings. The Hurricanes third string guy only came in with, like, yeah, in a game 7 that was still very much up for grabs. That did happen. They're not out here running goalies left and right and, you know, take them out or anything, but this is happening.
You're
thinking of
Jacob Trouba checking guys in the head.
Yes. That's exactly. Yeah, they're doing that. I often say, like, you can only play who the schedule puts in front of you, and you can only play the roster that team has available to play you. You don't have to apologize for it. But at the same time, to say that this team has been going from, you know, spicy pork and guys game 7.
Oh, remember, he had the broccoli.
Dude, it was so funny. It was so good. It was so great. But they're going from that to facing Andrei Vasilevskiy. Yeah, that is a significant change. And owe it to Rangers fans to pretend that they've been doing this against elite level goaltending.
Well, let me say that. I guess my thing was, I feel like I saw it a lot from like Pittsburgh columnists. You know what I mean? Like, I think somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody had a column the other day, like, you know, if the Rangers were playing good goalies, and it's like, yeah, but I mean, sorry, your goalies weren't healthy. And oh, that's the other thing, especially with the Penguins. It's like, oh yeah, Tristan Jarry, fucking playoff warrior. The Penguins weren't trying to trade him a year and a half ago, trying to get out from under his nasty contract, right? Mm-hmm. No. And it's the same thing with Freddie Anderson. Oh yeah, Freddie Anderson, the playoff warrior Freddie Anderson, who's had so much postseason success. Yeah, the Rangers wouldn't have had any trouble, you know, scoring power play goals against that guy. No. What are you talking about?
Yep. No, that's...
Fucking that's, drives me crazy, these
that,
people.
That part is fair. But also, all this stuff did happen.
Sure. But let's talk about Carolina quickly here. They have an interesting offseason ahead of them as well. They're not like looking down at we might have to trade so-and-so and like the Blues, or we got to re-sign like elite level players like the Flames. But they just have a shitload of free agents they have to sign. And I'll just run down the list really quick of like guys who are consequential, let's say, with all due respect to Stephen Lawrence. Marty Natchez, RFA, needs a new deal. Not arbitration eligible. That helps. Max Domi, Nino Niederreiter, Vince Trocheck. That's up front. On the back end, Ethan Bear, Tony DeAngelo, arbitration eligible. RFAs, Ian Cole needs a new contract. Brendan Smith needs a new contract. I think in both of the cases of those the UFA defensemen, I feel like you're fine letting them walk or bringing them back if the money's right. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want a lot of money. I think you're fine.
But Rantanen and Anderson are also both eligible for extensions, or you can just
eligible.
Yes. Let them go and do what you did last year and go get new goalies. So.
Kind of worked.
Did
for a little while.
Did worked.
And then obviously, like you got to think about whether Jake Gardiner is ever going to play again, because he's a year away from unrestricted free agency as well, and that gives you a little extra breathing room. But the thing I want to talk about is, what do you give Natchez? What do you give Bear? What do you give D'Angelo? Because I think it's a really interesting question on all three.
Mm-hmm.
Natchez is like a, 40-point guy, something like that, 23 years old. So he's a guy where you can easily talk yourself into. Well, you just give him like what you give him the Hurricane special. What if we give you $4 million for 6 years? How's that sound?
Yep.
You know,
and this is also Carolina, where they can be weird about contracts. And have interesting expectations, and whether that's because of budget or philosophy or whatever, if they're not giving you an offer sheet, they tend to be sort of tough to deal with. Works out for them, but it's going to be interesting for all of them. But you know, Tony DeAngelo, does he, you know, what's he willing to do? I mean, he came in, took the cheap prove it deal. Does he now feel he has proven it? Well, he had to, but I mean, he had a pick of probably a few places he could have gone. Does he feel like he's proven it, or does he, and now he wants to cash in, or is there, you know, some sense of loyalty that, hey, these guys, gave me that chance? I don't know. We should point out, it's very, very funny that Tony DeAngelo got knocked out by the New York Rangers.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That is extremely amusing. And also the really, the worst thing that happened in that series, that, it was TNT or ESPN cut away from the handshake line before Tony DeAngelo got to Georgiev.
Yeah. That's inexcusible. I was not watching at that point, but I agree.
Inexcusable. What are you doing?
Yeah, there was a point last night during the Oiler game where like there was a thing where, you know, a guy gets kicked out of the faceoff circle for some like perceived violation of fairness. And they cut, just like for a split second, they cut to Evander Kane right when he's saying, "What are you doing? Just drop the fucking puck."
Yeah.
Like very obviously saying, "Drop the fucking puck." Uh-huh. It rocked. It was very funny. We really missed out on a good one there for sure.
It's partly because it's, I guess, a little bit related to the Tony D'Angelo thing. But did you see Evander Kane's agent apparently tweeted out like a
big money bag?
A big money bag.
And
was,
you know what?
That was great.
Really, I agreed. And well, you know, again, this is the NHL where like tweeting an emoji, you're like, oh, it's the funniest thing that ever happened in this league. But he's right. He's scored 13 goals in 13 games or whatever it is.
That's pretty good. Yeah, it is. Yeah, he's leading the league in postseason goals, but it's sort of like, dude, maybe not. Also, I feel like Evander Kane maybe shouldn't be like tweeting out bags of money, but whatever.
I don't disagree with your point. I'm just saying, like, it's true. He's going to get a shitload of money.
He is going to get a lot.
Now, I do wonder who's going to give him that money, because I can see the PR headaches obviously coming about. You can sell to people, hey, look, all baggage aside, we got this guy for $1 million or whatever the Oilers paid him.
Mm-hmm.
You can sell that to people. Redemption story, all that shit. Can you sell, we're giving this guy $7 million for...
I mean... I feel like, honestly, the amount of blowback that the Oilers got blew over fairly quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
I think if I'm another team, I'm looking at like hockey mad Edmonton in a Canadian market and all of this. People were mad for like 3 days, and then he started scoring.
Well,
goals,
you know,
and
it's
fine with it. So
it's hard to argue with a guy who scored like at a 40 goal pace or whatever. You know, like if you can get that kind of, I get why. You know, it's the same thing with D'Angelo. The baggage, like the Hurricanes had to have meetings with their season ticket holders to be like, we just think he's good at hockey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. You're probably whoever signs Tony D'Angelo this summer, if like the Hurricanes trade him or let him walk even, which I would be surprised, but maybe not, because it didn't really cost him anything, you know. I wonder what those guys are going to get, but like you can totally make the hockey case for Tony D'Angelo has proven that he deserves to be paid what the Rangers were paying him before they bought him out.
Yep. If you're the Hurricanes.
Yeah.
How do you manage all of this and still add some sort of top-level scoring? Because that seems to be the consensus, that they just didn't have enough elite guys. Not, you know, team-wide offense, fine. Sebastian Aho is a very good player. Andrei Svechnikov didn't have much of a playoff, which I think is the second straight year that that's the case, which is maybe a bit concerning. But he's 22. He's going to continue to get better. But that they need another piece, at least. And I mean, they've got trade assets to go out and do something.
They sure do.
I don't, it would be out of character for them to be bidding on big time free agents, but maybe. But I don't know how you fit that all in. But it also feels like for them to get to the next step, which for them the next step is like Stanley Cup favorite, I think they need another top level piece, and goes without saying, very hard to get in this league.
Yeah. The obviously, you know, related to not being able to score. They were 8 of 66 down the stretch in the regular season, their last like 30 games or whatever. 8 of 66 on the power play. Mm-hmm. That's not good enough. And then in the postseason, they were 7 of 54. So similarly, not very effective. And do you want to say that this is because they didn't have that big time weapon, or like maybe Svechnikov was playing hurt or whatever? I totally buy all that. I wonder how many guys who like would even be available given the flat cap situation and that kind of thing. Like the Hurricanes do a good job. They don't have a first round pick this year, but they have plenty to go the next couple of years. I don't know. Like how do you make that work with the cap, with having to re-sign all these guys? Like, I think it starts with you let D'Angelo walk, because D'Angelo is going to be expensive.
I guess,
or
you
trade his rights or whatever.
Yeah, trade his rights is probably
if
more.
You can.
And you know, you see what he wants, but yeah, and it's the cap plus, is there an internal budget that's significantly different than the cap? Which, you know,
I'm not
in fairness,
convinced of that.
Yeah, in fair, I mean they've spent, yeah, I mean if you can do something to make Jake Gardner go away, that helps.
Well, again, like I think he's just like LTIR retired.
Mm-hmm. But even like, you know, it's a, you'd rather
trade him
not
to Arizona,
have guys like that.
Montreal.
Yeah,
yeah,
it,
for
it
sure.
It gives you more freedom if you don't have to. And especially, you know, the LTIR really helps you only if you're going up to the cap. Otherwise, it just
sure. Again, sits there. I think they would for
yep.
you know, the right.
They
the
should.
Right
they're
whatever.
Right there. Yeah. And yeah, so they probably will. So I mean, I guess in a way it's nice to, I'd probably rather have a half dozen middle lineup / depth guys to deal with than one or two franchise players like some of the other teams have. But yeah, they've got some work cut out for them.
Hear me out, Johnny Gaudreau.
Maybe.
Something to think about, especially Jordan Stahl's coming off the books next season. Then that'll be a guy who, you know, he costs $6 million. He's a really good mm-hmm. player, but is he a $6 million player? Well,
yep.
maybe.
Yep.
So, yeah, I you know, other than that, their long term outlook is interesting, just because they have their defensemen, the bulk of their defensemen signed for a couple of years, and then who knows? But yeah,
and,
so
one last thing on them,
sure.
Jesperi Kotkaniemi, 2 points in two rounds. Two secondary assists.
Yeah.
As an 8-year deal kicking in. I hate stuff like this because the Hurricanes are pretty clearly smarter than most teams, which means they are absolutely smarter than guys on podcasts. I hope they're right on this guy, because I'm not seeing it so far.
Yeah, I mean, he's turning 22 in July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So plenty of room to, you know, three, four more seasons to keep growing. And you know, there are plenty
of guys.
And if
he does at the rate they have him, it's a huge win.
Yeah.
And I don't mean he has to be like an all-star 80-point guy. But
yeah, I mean, I look,
know,
like
man.
There are
Eight
plenty
years,
of guys who yikes. Just really like, you know, how many people come into the league at 18 or whatever and are impact players by the time they're like, nobody's Jason Robertson, I guess is my point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or very few. Jason Robertson's Jason Robertson, but very few guys are Jason Robertson. I really do think it takes till you're like 20, like especially if you're brought in earlier than you probably should be, like they did with Kotkaniemi in Montreal. Like,
yeah, he was, you know, and he was very, very young when he got drafted. I guess my counter argument would be there are guys who are a top three overall pick and 4 years later are having
much sure.
more impact
Absolutely.
than this guy is right now.
Yeah, but like I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't be surprising to me at all if at age 24 we're like, damn, what a bargain that Kotkaniemi
caught. Yep, and that's obviously that's obviously what the gamble is. And
but I can obviously see it going the other way too.
Yeah,
what do you want from me?
That's how gambles work.
You know, Sean, I hadn't thought about that. That is how gambles work.
Yeah. Speaking of which, this podcast is brought to you by 8 hours of gambling ads later.
I was just going to say, like, boy, it's getting bad on these NHL broadcasts.
It's
unbelievable.
I was actually surprised when I wrote my piece this week about, like, how good the playoffs have been. that was the number one thing people came back with, is how frustrated people are with the overwhelming amount of gambling content, not just ads, but forced content and everything. I don't know that there's a backlash, and I can't, there's obviously enormous money for the league and the TV partners and everything here, but I think if anything, I underestimated how frustrated a lot of fans seem to be with how this is going.
Yeah, it's a bit much for sure. And now, like, now even it's getting into wrestling where, like, you can bet on AEW shows and stuff like that, and WWE. And it's
that had always been the case, and it was just, like, super, that's how you knew what was going to happen all the time, because people would just look at the betting odds show.
Yeah, the money would move hugely. Yeah, no, that's true. But I'm saying, like, on AEW, they're going, like, and don't forget, you can bet on how many tables get broken and how many, like, this and that. And
on the show? Like, God. Yeah, it's...
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're doing it on the show now. They're like, who's gonna hit their finisher first? You can bet on that. And it's like...
Yeah, that sucks.
Boy, oh boy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, like... Like, up here, Sportsnet is just inundated with this stuff, including there's, like, an intermission segment where they
talk. Same here.
And it's, like, on the one hand, I don't want to see any more people I like get laid off from sports media jobs. So if this is what means that, you know, we don't have another round of that, I guess I'm okay with it. I can be annoyed, put it this way. I don't mind being annoyed, but it's not like they're advertising, you know, mattresses all the time to the point where it's annoying. They're advertising something that is actively harmful for a lot of people. And
I didn't watch Uncut Gems and think to myself, I wish there was more people like this.
Yeah.
I wish there was more Howies out there.
Anyway, yeah. So anyways, check me out on my podcast tomorrow that is sponsored by a gambling place. And don't tell them I said any of this, please.
That's right. You know what? Hey, we'll be right back and we'll talk about all the other news from the NHL this week that I could remember happened.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Life can be overwhelming and many people can get burned out, sometimes without even knowing it. If you're like me, when burnout happens, sometimes you don't even realize it until you're very far down that road. Symptoms can involve lack of motivation, irritability, fatigue, and more. And we typically associate burnout with work, but that's not the only cause. Any of our roles in life can lead to us feeling burned out. BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's causing the stress, what's causing the burnout in your life. I have people in my life close to me who have tried therapy and have had very good results with it, are very glad that they did, that they opened up, that they found somebody that they could talk to. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist. You don't even have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's whatever you are comfortable with, and it's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. And right now, our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/puck. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/puck.
All right, we're back. We got some quick hits here, I guess. Reported this morning that Marty St. Louis extension, 3 years in Montreal. I don't think anyone on earth is surprised by this one.
The only question for a long time had been, did he want to come back? And he made it fairly clear that he did. So I had a few, like when they hired him, I remember a lot of people said, well, what's the worst that could happen? If he's a terrible coach, then, you know, they finish last and hopefully win the draft lottery. And I said, well, the worst that can happen is he's just good enough that the team improves just enough that they give him an extension and then find out that he's not the best coach available. And, you know, it's the Dominic Ducharme thing all over again. And I had some people today come back to me and go, okay, that's what you said was, isn't this exactly what you said was going to happen? And I'm not really sure that it is, because I feel like he did a better than adequate job, even though the record didn't say so.
I think he
actually did do enough to earn a full-time shot. And so I don't think this was the worst case. I think this was, I'm not willing to bet the farm that he finishes his contract, but in Montreal without them having to make a move, but this feels like a reasonable gamble.
Yeah. I was looking at this morning when they announced it, and like all the underlying numbers are like not good. Except he had they went like 14-19-4 or whatever, and they had a 101.1 PDO, which made me laugh. Like, oh, they like actually got shooting and stuff like that, and were still really bad. Which tells you how bad they were even under Ducharme, because like pretty much all the numbers are an improvement from where they were under Ducharme, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like, I think with this, like, it's not about wins and losses. You don't care what the record is. You just want to see your well, it's not that you don't care, I guess, but you just want to see your young players develop, because they certainly weren't under Ducharme, right? And like, even if he just gets Cole Caulfield to be good, and that's the only guy he gets to be good, that's not nothing.
Yeah, especially given that they've got a first overall pick coming in. So if this guy's only skill is that he's the young offensive forward whisperer, that still is a pretty good fit.
Yeah, and, you know, Nick Suzuki, of course, is already one of the best centers in the world, so they don't have to worry about that. But yeah, no, I shouldn't have said it. It's not at all about wins and losses, because of course it is. You don't want to finish fucking dead last every single year, but also like, I wonder what, yeah, well, sure. I do wonder what the organizational philosophy, like, do they go to Brendan Gallagher and say, you know, wouldn't be the worst thing. You like agreed to be traded.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Anderson, you know, wouldn't be the worst thing if you said, you know what, I'll go to LA, I'll go to Arizona, I'll go to Carolina, whatever, get someone. I don't know if you saw this, they said maybe Christian Dvorak is already on the block, which again makes perfect sense. Like, he's not going to be in their long-term plans. He's like, fine.
But boy, that was a rough trade. I didn't hate it at the time, but did not work out. And in hindsight, also does really feel like a reactionary move to the offer sheet. Like, oh yeah, well,
100%.
We're going to take your first round pick that you just gave us. Ha ha. We're going to flip it into a player who's better than the guy you signed. Not a bad plan.
I think on the whole, I would say Christian Dvorak currently is better than Jesperi Kotkaniemi, for sure.
Okay.
That having been said, long term, probably not so much. I look at their roster. Like, how do you not, if you're the Canadiens, go, you know what, Jeff Petrie, I see ya.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, he has to agree to waive his no move, which it's weird that he has no move, but that makes a lot of sense to me. Of like, you just go, well, anybody who's not nailed down, Carey Price, you want to go? Bye, see ya.
And yeah, that is the big one, right? Is Carey Price. That and I think the rest of it all flows from that. And even if you call up Jeff Petrie, will you waive your? He might say, well, what's Carey Price doing? Because if Carey Price is going to go, and we're going to go through this year with, you know, with Jake Allen and whoever else, and
Sam Montalbán, maybe.
Yeah, and just get to, you know, try to get to Connor Bedard land. Then you probably want to move out everyone. Whereas if Carey Price is like, no, I want to be in Montreal, I'm going to come back, I'm going to be Carey Price next year. You know, whether you think he can or not, if that's his plan, but it has always sounded. Well, I haven't heard anything that sounds like a door closing on him moving, I guess would be the way to phrase that. I haven't heard anything that made me think he's definitely going, but typically with these sorts of guys, by now we've heard, like, no, he's not going anywhere, and you haven't really seemed to hear that.
Yeah, I think... You know, Martin San Luis today was talking about, like this morning was talking about, development is so important to us, blah, blah, blah. And I think if that's what he's talking about the day he signs, I think that kind of signals they're going to, it's going to be all hands on off deck, I guess, right? Like just to get everybody out of town and get the kids going. And, you know, then you try to strike that balance of, well, how many veterans should we have just to, like, make sure we're not, like, embarrassing ourselves?
Yeah. This is the thing where you don't want the Cole Caulfields and Nick Suzuki's and Shane Wright's or whoever's to be, like, so surrounded by losing and, you know, getting their heads kicked in every night that when you then, in a few years, right, go, okay, it's time to win, that they're so, like, battle-scarred by all that that they can't do it. So, but again, if you were ever going to be bad and kind of throw in the towel on a season, this is the year to do it, because the next can't miss franchise guy is here. And
And if you finish dead last, you have a 4% chance of getting the first overall pick. So what's not to go for?
Yeah. Well, I take that better than a 0% chance and finished 15 points out of the playoffs, 19th overall.
Do you know how many picks the Canadiens have in the first three rounds this season? First four rounds. Let's do first four rounds.
No, I don't. I
10.
Yep.
That's a lot.
Uh-huh.
And they're probably not done.
No. That is...
That's wild.
Yeah. There's a few. It's them, Seattle. I feel like there's one other team that has all the picks.
Columbus has two in the top 15, I want to say.
Yeah, that's in Buffalo also has got two high ones. Anyways, yeah, that's going to be fun. It's going to be fun, especially with the draft in Montreal. Lots of work for them.
You know, now that I look at it, there's a condition on one of these picks that's still up in the air. They get Edmonton's second round pick if Edmonton doesn't make the cup final.
Okay. So if Edmonton does make the cup final, is that like, the Oilers pick,
they get,
I guess,
next
somebody
year's
else's
second round.
Okay. All right.
Next year's second round Oilers pick. But so the Canadiens have a rooting interest in this one, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Another thing that happened this week, Jason Spezza retired. Don't think anybody's really surprised.
Not shocked, but and immediately took a job in the Leafs front office. Yeah.
Did you see everybody being like, feels like cap circumvention? Good, circumvent the cap. Who cares?
I mean, if it turns out that he's making $5 million to be the assistant GM or something,
sure.
But I don't think that's the case.
Spezza's, like, are you saying that, oh, he was worth so much more than that last season? Was he really?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. So. The thing with him, it's a bummer, last year. Yeah. He finished like what, 5 points away from 1,000, which is kind of a bummer that he wasn't able to get.
Yeah,
I
hope he signs like a PTO, professional tryout contract. And like they just get him into nothing but empty net situations at various opportunities throughout the year.
Yep.
Just like he keeps coming back and playing one more game.
He's the closer.
He's like Ric Flair. He's like one more retirement game.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
But yeah, really good player for a really long time. But like I remember several years ago now, I wrote a thing of like, who's a guy who like could reasonably make the Hall of Fame? And this was maybe when he was like just getting to Dallas or whatever. That was a guy where I was like, maybe like two more 80-point seasons. And then he never actually had that, right? Like couldn't really stay healthy for a lot of the time. But like, you know, you play 1,250 career games, you get to almost 1,000 points. That's all very good territory for me.
Yeah. He's
really nice player.
Real nice player. Lots of good you know, stories where I am, both from Toronto and at Ottawa. Good guy, everyone seemed to like. Good in the room, all those things. Real good player. Apparently a pretty smart guy, so you wish him luck in his front office endeavors, where he can learn from Kyle Dubas, which, you know, insert punchline here, but yeah.
Man, like, the, you know, I guess the funny thing about this is that people say his job is going to be something akin to, here's how you convince every guy who's 35 years old to sign for the league minimum.
Yeah.
It's working so far.
It would be very funny if, like, his first day on the job, like, at the front office meeting, Kyle Dubas is like, all right, what other old idiot can we take to the cleaners on a contract? Let's take advantage of some gullible old man and give him league minutes. And Spets is just sitting there like, what? Wait, dude. I'm right here.
It just, like, doesn't occur to him that they're talking about
Yeah, him. he's like, Ryan Getzlaff, right? Yeah, we can get him for sure.
Evgeny Malkin's 35.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah, you know what, Christ? If they sign Malkin at age 35 to, like, a you know, 2-year deal worth a total of $4 million or whatever, mm-hmm. that I'll say, you know what, they are circumventing the cap somehow. I don't know how they're doing it.
Yeah, but Ryan, have you heard about local tax rates?
I haven't.
They're lower.
That means he's going to Arizona.
Some
right?
places than they are in others. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there you have it. That makes all the difference in the world to me. All right. Two more pieces of news here. They're announcing the Marc Messier Leadership Award today. They're doing the slow rollout, one a day of, like, the relatively minor awards for the next few days, I guess. Let's see here. Messier Award today, Jack Adams tomorrow, Masterton on the 3rd, Willie O'Ree on the 4th, Frank J. Selke Award on the 5th, Lady Bing on the 6th, King Clancy on the 7th.
Yeah, it's, and then funny they're doing
the lumped the Masterton and the Jack Adams and the Selke with all the awards.
So they're doing about. What is it? The Norris Vezina Hart. Is there another one? That might be it. And then the All-Stars. Yeah. And they're doing, like, a one-hour show, but it's not like the Vegas award show.
It's just still on TV.
And which really worries me that we're now, like, quietly killing that, which would be unacceptable, because that was one of my favorite nights of the year, is watching NHL awkwardly try to be fun and entertaining. I will be furious if that's the case.
Yeah. So who you got for the Marc Messier Leadership Award? This is just a guy Marc Messier chooses.
Yeah. I mean, the answer, of course, is I don't care.
Well, sure.
This award is dumb. But yeah, of old guys, old captains who haven't won yet, there's Ovechkin.
That's not necessarily true. So my answer immediately in my head was Patrice Bergeron, but then I remembered he won it last year.
He won last year. Zdeno Chara had already won.
He has already.
Crosby won a while ago.
2010.
Yes. I mean, it's very often somebody who is nearing the end of the road.
But also, like, had to
have played. Joel Thornton has never.
Well, I was just about to say that, like, you know, I can see an argument where you go Getzlaff.
Yes. Right? Yeah, Getzlaff's a good one.
I would say arguably didn't really, like, have the kind of season that you would want to give him a big award for. Because at some point that just becomes the master.
Luckily, this one isn't a big award. It's,
you know what I mean, though. Like, if you're you know who this is a big award to? The one guy who votes on it.
Yeah. We had a 3-year stretch where it went Nick Foligno, Derek Eglund, Wayne Simmonds won this award. Oof. So I don't think Ryan Getzlaff has to have had that great a season. You know who would also be a decent pick? Wouldn't shock me, is Jason Spezza.
Spezza, you know who, who's a guy that it just occurred to me, I think this would be an awesome choice, like, if we're going to do this. Joe Pavelski.
Yes, that's another very
old guy, leadershipy. He's a center.
The only thing with him is
not really this year anymore, but
yeah, you know, Getzlaff and Spezza are leaving, so it's kind of the last chance on them. Also, previous winners have included Matt Sundin, Jerome Iginla, Mark Giordano. I'm sensing a pro-bald bias by Mark Messier here.
Hey.
Feel like he's looking out for his own guys.
So that's another Mark.
Good news for Brian Getzlaff, for sure.
And it's bad news for Duncan Keith, who's another guy I can see him talking himself into. Duncan Keith, look how far the Oilers got after they got Duncan Keith. You think that's coincidence? Parentheses, yes, I do. Mark Messier doesn't. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll find out at 7 p.m. tonight who's the winner of the prestigious. I will be
glued to my screen to find out.
So I'm on the Wikipedia page for this, right? And did you remember that this was a monthly award in the 2006-07 season?
No, I'm reminded of that every time I look at the Wikipedia page and
This is the first time I've ever done it. I'm not a sicko like you, just pulling. You know what? It's been a month. I better go look at the Mark Messier Leadership Award Wikipedia page again. That's Sean at home.
Correct. Yep.
He has a calendar reminder. But yeah, Brent, this is how long ago the award was created. Brendan Shanahan, Scott Niedermeyer, these are the monthly winners. Sidney Crosby, Vinny LeCavalier, Roberto Luongo, and then the season winner for 06-07 was Chris Chelios.
Wow. I love the idea that they had this as a monthly award. They're like, you were just rocked. Great leadership this month. You absolutely... And that even the NHL was like, you know what? No, this is too much. We do not need this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
It's so funny to me because apart from LeCavalier and Crosby, those monthly award winners are like, here's a guy who's friends with Mark Messier.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just so glad the NHL has an award to recognize good guys. Like that's what they should have their own hour long award show. Just all of the good guys.
Here's the niceies. Yeah.
Nice.
Here's all the nice guys in the league. We love them so much. We give them all beautiful kisses.
Yeah. Speaking of stupid awards,
the GM of the Year award. Yeah, this is the last thing we have on the list here for the day,
which I have not seen anything about. But I guess that's not because this is the one award that they vote on after the second round.
Yes.
Because, of course, we know who the best players are after the regular season. But with the GM, we just have to get, you know, there's a lot of trading, a lot of transactions that go on during the first month of the playoffs. So I would assume the finalists are being announced soon.
Yeah, I would think so as well. So but I'll say this. So you, when we talked about this last night, you said to me, they only ever give it to people who made the conference final.
Mostly.
That's mostly true. It's happened three times that someone who didn't make the conference final won it. Do you remember who those guys are?
I don't, but I know that I was looking at it yesterday and like Bill Zito was one of them last year.
He was a finalist, yeah.
A finalist, but I'm saying winners. Oh, you're talking somebody to win it. Yes.
Three guys, winners.
No, I don't remember.
Don Maloney in 2010. And I said, oh, sure, that's when Arizona went to the – that's like a couple of years before Arizona went to the conference final. Doug Armstrong in 2012 and Bob Murray in 2014.
Okay. So since then, it's been
– Lou Lamoriello, Don Sweeney, George McPhee, David Poile, Jim Rutherford, Steve Yzerman.
Yeah. And like
– those are all guys who had really good teams.
2 years ago, for example, like the three finalists were Lamoriello, Julian Breezebaugh, and Jim Nill. Three guys who went to the Final Four. Who was the other final? Who was the Western finalist that year who got snubbed? Because that's the fun part for me is like out of the Final Four, who is going to be the one who gets snubbed? And it's probably Chris Drury, right? Because he's the new guy. And
yeah, he didn't really do
Jeff Gordon's.
Well, you know what? His fingerprints are really all over this team. He made the
he's got
big
a few.
Trades at the deadline, obviously. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised at all if Chris Drury is a finalist.
I just think that, like, Breezebaugh should, you know, he's going to win a as a shot to win a third cup, you got to put him on there. Joe Sakic, I think, has never been nominated or never been a finalist, so I feel like he would be an excellent pick. And my pick to win the whole thing is Ken Holland. I mean, this is the GMs giving the award. Of course, they're going to give it to the guy who did all the GM things and had it actually work. You know, brought in a leader, signed a free agent, did all this stuff, and got a lot of criticism for it, which by voting for him, they can now go, haha, see, this guy.
Yeah, it's funny. So on the Puck Soup mailbag that we're going to do on the Patreon in a minute, an Oilers fan last night was like, you know, Mike Smith's been pretty good, so doesn't it feel like he actually should be a source of praise for Ken Holland? Because they could have brought back
with the goaltending.
Yeah.
And again, they gave it to Lou Lamoriello twice in a row. So clearly, and before that it was Don Sweeney, but before that it was George McPhee and David Poile. So you're talking lifers. Jim Rutherford the year before that. They love giving this to lifers. And Ken Holland would just be such a magnificent middle finger. Hey, all you analytics nerds who said that the Oilers weren't going to be good. Haha, Ken Holland knows a thing or two about winning.
Yeah, and he also fired the coach. That is true. Immediately. Yep. But the reason I brought that up, of course, is because that I think that post was posted 1 second before puck drop from game one, where Mike Smith was unbelievable. But yeah, like... I guess my thing is, like, they played it, they desperately tried to upgrade the goaltending and didn't, and then they were like, let's give this 40-year-old 2 years. How's that sound? That sounds great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I guess we'll see. But yeah, no, like, I'm not going to be surprised. I think if we're going just from the final three, here's who you leave out: Brisebois. Even as he's going for his third cup.
Think
and he hasn't well, obviously he hasn't won it yet,
and he's been aggressive at trade deadlines, and
here's my reasoning though. He lost all his good players in the regular season and they got worse, right? Like by the standings they were worse.
Yeah,
right. So I can totally see a world where he's the one guy, but like Sakic needs the recognition at some point.
Yeah, Sakic is the guy who probably should win it.
Should win it, yes. Well, you bring in a guy like Darren Helm.
Exactly. Did it work?
Fucking off and running.
Yeah, I think it did.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting just to see who they pick, just because it's always interesting to see who they pick, but... Will they get it right? Probably not. It's very rare.
Well, I mean, you can't even get this award right. Like, what is the GM of the year? Like, who made the best?
The guy who did the best.
That year or whose team is.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
the guy who does the things. That's so good.
Yeah. The best guy at being things. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's a pretty clear award. Everybody agrees. Sean, why don't you say what you have to plug?
I've got a bunch of stuff on The Athletic this week. I wrote my one and only positive column on Monday about the playoffs being good. I've got my thing today where I look at each of the four teams that left, and I go, if we're going to be in the copycat league, which we always hear that the NHL is, what are we actually, what do we hope we learn, and what do we hope we don't learn from these teams? And I think maybe tomorrow, maybe Friday, I'll have like my all playoff bust roster where we can... shake our heads disapprovingly at 20 or so guys who didn't play very well in the playoffs.
Wow.
Small sample size, baby.
I wouldn't want to get involved in that kind of finger pointing, but I get it.
No.
For me, obviously EPRinkside.com. And if you sign up for an annual subscription, they will add another 3 months on at the end of your year. So that's a nice little bonus just for you. If you use the code ILOVEEP, all one word, all capital letters, that'll get you in the door. And then, of course, you're going to want to sign up for the Puck Soup Patreon, where, you know, we're always doing little contents. earlier this week. No, end of last week, actually. Me, Sean, and a special guest named Greg Wyszynski from ESPN. We got together and we talked about some big hits from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that most of which I had never seen. And we talked about, like, I watched them live for the first time ever. And then we talked about how many games they would be suspended if they did the exact same hit here in 2022.
That was very fun, and people very much enjoyed hearing somebody, like, see the Pavel Bure on Shane Shirley hit for the very first time. And, yeah, the reactions went very very much like you would like you would expect them to go.
So the best part was, I think it was the Mark Messier hit on Mike Modano was the first one we watched. And I pressed play, and the most insane headshot I'd ever seen happened 1 second into the video. It was bananas. So it only got better from there, I would say. So if you want to check that out, that's patreon.com/pucksoup. And thank you for listening. Thank you for your support, as always. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Pucksoup.